Hello, I'm Craig Constantine. Are you passionate about creating amazing podcasts? Terrific. You are in the right place. Welcome to Pod Talk, short conversations with podcast creators that are not just about podcasting, because I like to take the scenic route. My guest today is Matt Phelan. Welcome, Matt. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, Craig. I'm good. I've got a little person with me who's a little bit unwell. I'm working and caring for someone today, but it's good. It's nice to have some company with me, and it's not anything terrible. So yeah, I'm good. I'm looking forward to chatting to you, Craig.
Terrific. I'm sorry to hear that you have someone in your household who's ill. I'm hoping that works out well. But I'm guessing with children, that's an everyday occurrence or a regular, that's all part of the bigger picture. Yeah. I mentioned before we hit record that I'm super curious in like how people measure success. And I kind of think the error is right there in the thing. Like, one shouldn't measure success. I saw a great talk with you where you mentioned the wonderful thing that we all say about whatever you make a metric, as soon as you start measuring it, then it becomes a target and then it loses its value as a metric. So as soon as I say measure success, I know I'm making the mistake. But you started your show in 2019, so something like 5 years in, and you're still going. Congratulations. Podcasting is lonely. But I'm wondering, do you think about success for the show? Is that something that you're even cognizant of when you're doing episodes?
So, yeah, you sort of introduced me quite well there, as in not making something a target. And as someone who measures happiness every day, I know how futile that can be. So I suppose when I know a show has had an impact, people contact me directly through other channels, through LinkedIn or through email or whatever. They will find a way to contact me and tell me how the story that may not be or relevant to them or not, and the impact it had on them. So I actually don't really look at how many views or listens or whatever, but you do know when something goes live and it's kind of hit an interest or at home, because people, it deeply resonates enough for them to go and contact you and tell you why that story has been personal to them. And it's often a part of a podcast that you couldn't have never have planned for. And it's part of the conversation you didn't know would happen. But the energy went that way, and two people ended up talking about something that is either universal or very relevant to some of the listeners. So for me, it's when people outreach and knock on my door and say, Matt, that thing that person said was really powerful, and this is why. And they like, and I like it when it happens. People take time to explain it, and I always think that's a privilege when you get those messages.
I would completely agree. I've said it before. It's jolting, like in a good way, when somebody does that to me, you know, even via email, but in person, it's just like, and I try to capture it like lightning in a bottle. Like, how do I hold on to that feeling I just had? Yeah. So that, you know, when I'm knee deep in editing, I'm like, I just go back to the feeling. Yeah. So I'm so glad to hear you say that. Every time I hear somebody say something like that, I'm like, oh, good. Okay. I'm not completely crazy. Matt's podcast. It was a wonderful, I love like all the web of interconnections. So Matt's podcast is called Happiness and Humans. And I had a guest on another show of mine, and afterwards I said to her, who should I talk to? And she said, oh, you got to talk to Matt. And I'd heard this conversation you had with her. So it's just fun to see how the podcasts that we create, they have a context. You know, there's like this, I almost think of it as like it's a little bait and switch. Like, I really want to get to talk to you because my show is, and then we all insert our show's topic. But when it really comes down to pressing record, the part between record and stop is really about the conversations. Yeah. And you mentioned to me about following the energy. I think you just said it there, and we talked about it before we pressed record. And did you always have that sense of follow the energy, like when you first started your show and when you're having conversations with your partners and when you're like pitching to companies? did you always realize that following the energy was critical, or can you point to where that became a thing you noticed?
No, it took me approximately 10 years to work that out. Because I was very lucky. In my early 20s, I started a business broadly in the world of digital transformation. And we grew rapidly over a 10-year period. It was very stressful, very hard, but on the surface, you would say it was being a success. And in between doing that and the happiness index, I had a sabbatical where because I'm quite geeky, I just reviewed how I spent my time and energy over those 10 years. And I calculated, and this is, I don't smoke, but this was a little bit off the back of a cigarette box, but I calculated that I estimated that I wasted about 50% of my time over 10 years. So I estimated that I wasted 5 years of time.
That's a little negative, but okay.
Yeah. But when you work in technology and SaaS, it's all about learning. So a negative would be to repeat the next 10 years and waste another 5 years to me.
Yes. Okay.
So for me, that's a positive. I've created some space where I can review this time. And I realized what I did is I didn't follow the energy, and I persisted sort of like going upstream when I should have been going downstream and following the water course, if we want to use a river analogy. And in my example, what I realized is the companies that we worked with and successfully transitioned into understanding digital and everything and all the things that we were working on, they wanted to. It didn't mean they would, but they wanted to. And I wasted half my time trying to convince organizations and businesses that you need to do this. If you don't do this, your business is going to fail. Like, this is, the world has moved. Like, we're living in this digital era. And I realized from that moment on in my next business, I wouldn't try and convince anyone of anything. I would just try and work with people that are at that point where they want to change or they want to move in a particular direction. And it's made the last 5 years in the podcast much more effective, productive, creative, because I'm just following the energy and I'm going with it. And I have this thing that I keep in my head all the time that I know things are going well if I feel like I'm surfing the wave, or if I'm trying to go against the wave, I'm just crashing all the time. But now I feel like I spent out of 10 years, I spent 5 years surfing and 5 years crashing. Now I feel like the last 5 years, maybe I've spent 4 years surfing and I'm still crashing on stuff. It's not perfect. But then I apply that into the way I think of everything to do with business into the podcast, which is just follow the energy and see where it goes. I'm not going to try and like put a square peg into a round hole because that's what the podcast, that's what the analytics has told me or something like that. So I know that's a long answer to your question, Craig, but that's how I visualize it.
You're even using the same language that I use. I say in my own head, I say bashing with a B, which is like the same. There's something about the sounds of those words, crashing and bashing. I know that when I'm bashing, and it happens to me when I'm doing podcasting, not in the moment when I'm recording, but like in the setup, or I'm imagining complicated systems and then the feeling that I recognize is the one you're describing. Like when I feel that I'm swimming upstream or bashing or trying to paddle out into the surf at the wrong spot, it's always massively beneficial for me to step back and go, why? Why do I feel like that's something I'm trying to do? My very first podcast show started with a name that was obtuse. And the joke that I tell people is, if you have to spend the first 30 seconds explaining the strange name of your show, you're wasting the 20 seconds that they're willing to give you. And then like the last 10, they're walking away. You're like, wait, it's really, you know, like, so I was just like, Craig, just pick an easier name for the thing.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the single biggest lesson that I would love to share with people is to go with the energy. So I guess the obvious question in my mind is there anything that you're currently bashing on or crashing against within the podcast? Or it looks like you got it pretty sorted out. You don't seem to be on like a strict schedule that you're bashing against. Anything that's
yeah
currently a challenge?
I think at the moment, One of the things that I'm staying strong on is not to chase names and people with high profile, because I think ultimately, I ran for 10 years a marketing agency. I know how the world works, and getting big names on your podcast is really good for the viewer count and so on. And they bring that, but then I have to remind myself that the whole point of the podcast for me was a discovery of really interesting people that have got one of three or four things normally centered around research and data to do with employee happiness. And there are sometimes people that have got like a big name in specifically in the area. And then I have to remind myself, actually, you know what, finding a professor from a university that no one's ever heard of that's done some incredible research, that's the thing that I'm excited about, because those big names have already been on all the podcasts. So there isn't anything new there. But when you uncover a really great bit of research that the world doesn't know about, that should, just because the professor is a researcher and doesn't care about marketing or getting numbers out there, but actually you can share that. So that's what I always toy with, because there is great opportunities sometimes to get the names on there as the Happiness Index brand and everything expands and goes global. We're getting more of those opportunities. But I have to keep reminding myself, if it is about the big names, that's another podcast. That's fine. We could start something on that. But this is about uncovering data, research and science to do with employee happiness. And I have to remind myself that that's what excites me as an interviewer. And maybe in the long run, maybe I become the problem and maybe someone takes over my role on the podcast. that's not an issue either. But that's the bit at the moment, just reminding myself, okay, this is why we do it, because there's learning in that. And it may be sometimes there's only a few other people that are going to learn from that, but that's why I'm doing it. And if I forget that, then I start to be like, I'm not someone who wants to start a podcast for the sake of it. I don't want to be a professional interviewer, if that makes sense. I'm not interested in that. Sure. Which lots of people are, and there's nothing against that, but it's, I'm not trying to create like a show, if that makes sense. It's a research podcast, really.
We flew right past your company. So I want to circle back and say, we didn't, I mean, you said it, but you said it really quick. So the Happiness Index is both the name of the company, and it's a platform, but it's also the name of a book.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, so give me the domain name of the thing, and maybe tell me, when did you finally, I'm going to guess that you really didn't want to write a book, but like, when did you finally realize, okay, I have to put the book out?
Yeah. So the domain name is thehappinessindex.com, and the product and the platform is effectively an employee engagement and happiness platform that HR professionals and CEOs use. And the reason the book has the same name is I took the data of what we've learned from measuring employee happiness in over 100 countries, and I turned it into, I used that data to share what we've learned. So that's where but it was quite funny, because my publisher is called Wiley, and we had this interesting conversation where everyone was trying to come up with all these different smart names, a bit like exactly what you said about your podcast before.
Too clever by half, right?
Yeah. And then someone said, why don't we call it the Happiness Index? This would be a lot easier. And that's why the two have the name. There was about 55 different better names before that, before we realized, actually, we just need to pull our heads out of our butts and just go, actually, why are we trying to overcomplicate this? There's enough interested in the Happiness Index. Let's just put the two together. So that's how it appeared. The first book before that is called Freedom to Be Happy, The Business Case for Happiness, which is a slightly different book. But going back to your second part of your question, did I want to write a book? I wasn't really sure whether I wanted to write it or not, but the pandemic happened. And for the first time ever, I had the space to consider writing a book. So I wanted a positive. I have this Michael Jordan quote on my phone, which is, always turn a negative into a positive. So when the pandemic was hitting, I just kept looking at that on my phone, thinking, right, what could I do to make this a positive situation for me? And one thing I didn't have before was time to turn our data into a book. So that's how the first book came, which was self-published, which led to a publisher approaching me. So lots of people often ask in the podcast world about writing books and so on. My advice would be, look, it's quite hard to get a publisher to come to you. So actually just write what you're really interested in, self-publish it. And if people are interested in it and they read it and they like it and it goes up the charts, then the publishers will come to you. I think that's a more effective way. And then by the time they come to you, you've had practice writing a book before. So my advice for anyone who's sort of in the podcast world or in this world of thinking about it, just publish a book on Amazon and just use it as a practice. Like, I know I always say I work in tech, so you become like the world that you work in, but I always see everything as a pilot. Like, I saw the podcast as a pilot. I see everything as a pilot. Once you see something as a pilot, the stress comes off and it becomes about learning. You can do it in anything. The next meal you cook, Craig, just see it as a pilot. It's not a problem. Just stop just piloting this new recipe.
So when you decided to write that book, I did homework before we, got on our call today, and somebody pointed out that the second book, the one that had the publisher behind it, doesn't actually contain advice. It's not a how-to. It doesn't tell HR people how to change things.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you got a lot of pressure. I know that that was the way you wanted to do it. You wanted to simply show what you guys felt you knew.
Yeah.
But did you get a lot of pressure, I'm guessing, from the publisher to like, no, you got to turn this. It has to be the third part. It has to be about how to make this work.
Yeah. It just comes from everywhere, which is everyone in life. It's the same with podcasts. Everyone in life wants simple tips, tricks, hacks, ways to do things. But I love reading books myself. And what I realized is if you read 10 business books, if you read Craig's book, it says do it this way. If you read Lisa's book, it says it do that way. And then by the time you've read the 10th book, you start confusing yourself because you think, oh my God, there's all these different ways. And sometimes the books contradict each other. So I realized that the world wants simplicity, but the world isn't that simple. And the thing that I fought for was to not treat the reader as an idiot, to treat the reader to be able to look at the data, analyze the data, and then decide what to do with it. And obviously I've tried to make the data and the insight as accessible as I can. But even it is a criticism of the book. And sometimes people will write reviews going, it was all very well learning this stuff, but now what do I do, Matt? And it's like,
now you integrate it, dear reader, right?
Yeah. And sometimes I wish that I could be that guy. But I remember my first editor, Susan Ferber, when we were talking about working together, she was like, the thing is, Matt, what the world doesn't need is another middle-aged white guy telling them how to think. And I thought, you are so right, Susan Ferber. And so that partly influenced the way that I think, but it also, that is the way that the Happiness Index works. Craig, do you have a twin by any chance?
I do not, although my wife is an identical twin.
Okay, so this would be a good test. A very difficult test to ask because the marriage relationship here we're about to get into.
She doesn't listen. It's okay.
Okay. So Craig, so your wife and her sister are identical twins. Are their personalities identical?
No, they are different.
So if two identical sisters are exactly the same from a DNA perspective, but end up with different personalities, it therefore means every individual is different. Every team's different. Every team in every company and every department's different. Therefore, every organization is different. So all these like attempts to say, this is the way that you should do cultural, this is the way you should run your business, they are doomed to fail. All you'll get is a few that become famous. So I didn't want to like get into that world of just telling people how to do it. What I wanted to do is say, this is what we've learned. These are the things that drive happiness. These are the things that drive good cultures and so on. And then you take it back to your organization, because again, you're married, Craig. I could write a list of advice for a married person, but I have no context about your marriage. And it's just going to be random. But what I could teach you, for example, is that one of the top drivers of two of the top drivers of happiness are positive relationships and acknowledgement. So what you could do is take that acknowledgement piece, and later when you speak to your wife, acknowledge something that she's done that was really made you happy. Now, I can't tell you how to do that, and that's what people want. They want you to go, what you should do, Craig, is go and get four red roses. Get four red roses.
Use this sentence.
Bring them to your wife and do it this way, which I don't think that's right, because you know your partner, and that's what makes the difference. So that's the pressure, is people want everything to be like the ABC of, but life doesn't work like that. And so I treat the reader as an intelligent being is my take on it.
People can pick up when you are treating them like they're intelligent people. And I don't mean that like in a trite way. When you, I know for at least for me, but it sounds like for you too, when you challenge yourself to go like, okay, what do I know? What don't I know? How can I be helpful? What is the thing that I could share here? And not get this big, oh, I know everything attitude. It winds up, I don't want to say it always works, but it really tends to work more often than not. I'm watching the time tick by here, and I always get like, oh no, talk more, ask more questions. is there anything top of mind for you around like the happiness project itself that you're thinking might be useful? Like, well, let's make this really hard. Lessons from studying happiness that we might be able to give to people who are podcasters. So giving my wife four roses would be a disaster. My wife's effectively like a master botanist, like really into plants. So if I gave her like red roses, she'd be like, seriously?
Yeah.
So we're like, you totally got it right about like, you know, here's the general idea, but not a specific how to. So yeah. I'm imagining, what are things that podcasters might misinterpret? Mm. Because I feel like podcasting is a very individual. I mean, there are people who have teams, and yay, that's awesome. Now you can work together and share your wins. But I'm just thinking, like, what are things that individual solopreneurs, is a word that gets thrown around in business, or people who are solo podcasters, that they can use sort of to identify things that make them happy or things that they should celebrate for themselves?
That's really fascinating question, Craig. And I think one of the things that I've learned, and I think the big shows overdo this, like I'm talking things like X Factor or the big TV shows, that emotions are how we connect with each other. And so we're talking about happiness. But if I think about all those direct messages I get after a show has hit home, they are never about happiness. They tend to be about unhappiness. So it tends to be people will share their story of unhappiness with me. And that's why I think certain shows have gone too far, because like you can't go on a show now unless you've got a backstory about how your life has gone terrible and then
yes.
story arc. So that's where it's gone too far. But what they're tapping into is that emotions are the shareable bit. So my tip from what we know at the Happiness Index would be, when you're designing your questions, you're thinking about your questions, to add what we would call more feeling questions to your people that you are asking. So say, for example, you have a podcaster on who sold their business. It would be, now, how did that feel? How did that moment feel? Or when they started their podcast, like can you remember? Let me ask you, Craig, let's just role play it. When you started on day one, can you remember how you felt? Like what was the feeling you had about starting your podcast?
I have this big Cheshire Cat grin, because I'm like, oh yeah, I can totally remember that. I started near the end of 2016, And at that time, I still am, but I was doing a whole bunch of parkour, which is basically running and jumping and playing for adults. I was hanging out with a gang of people who are half my age. And I was just like stupid happy. I would lead exercise for hours and then we'd laugh and then I'd go home. And I realized I was listening to podcasts that I thought were really horrible. And I thought, huh, I keep having all these really cool conversations now with people from all over the world about movement. And I'm just stupid happy after I have one of those conversations. I should figure out some way to, you know, my brain's going, you know, there's a thing called podcasting. So it was just this. And yeah, I'm a tech person, so I can make anything work, but it also could become problematic because I get lost in all the rabbit holes.
Yeah.
But it was just this joy of like, you know, I could just press record and share these conversations that I'm finding so enjoyable. So I'm Cheshire Cat grinning because yes, I can remember. Yes, it's actually, I really had this exciting, positive feeling in mind when I wanted to start. And it was also about sharing this big positive feeling. That's what I wanted to do through the show. So it's like a triple hit.
Yeah. And second question, when you bash, you know, you describe sometimes like you bash and it feels like you're bashing. Can you describe to us how that feels? Like, what is that? You started to mention it, but how does that feel? Why do you recognize that?
It usually starts with like a spinning or a frustrating, and I would say almost every time it comes from me trying to make things better. I like, how can I? This is the guest outreach is the hardest part of podcasting, in my opinion. I spend hours on it, and then I'm like, is there a way that I could optimize this or get a piece of software or like, you know, stuff people into contact relationship management software? And I just get into this like the horrible saw of continuous improvement. Like, yeah, continuous improvement is good, but at some point you have to stop trying to improve and just go, this is awesome. Could I just keep doing this? Yes, I could. It doesn't cost a ton of money. It doesn't take a ton of time. People love it. I love it. Stop trying to think, try to make it better, Craig. So that's where the frustration comes from for me when I start trying to make it better or.
Yeah. So I would say that most of the world of work is designed around the assumption that human beings are rational. And we know at the Happiness Index that we are emotional beings. So trying to pretend human beings are at work are robots doesn't work. And looking at your analytics is going to be an important part of it and learning and so on. But I would say it's the emotional part of the interview and the guest and that interplay that people are gonna connect with. And if you just listen now and you resonate with what Craig was saying on those two points on like day one and what it feels like when it's not working, message Craig and we can see if this does actually work or not.
Yeah. Terrific. Yeah. Can you imagine yourself since you're describing the podcast as not core to what the business is doing, but it's also core to like your ongoing, it almost feels like a restorative process for you. Like you, this is your opportunity to like, in the most naked sense, to go and do the emotional interchange next to this topic that you love. But can you imagine stopping the podcast? Like what would that feel like?
I haven't considered it. So it's quite interesting to consider it. I feel like it would be, there's so many people that I want to speak to. And there's so many people that I want to share those conversations with. I would feel like it's stopping short because there's new research into what makes us happy at work all the time. And I would still go and do that, but I just wouldn't hit record. And I know that I now would see it as like not a waste of a conversation, but a wasted opportunity to share what that person has to share. Because where Happiness in Humans works is I'm normally pulling out like people that don't normally go out and talk, but they've got often more to say in terms of their work than some people who talk all the time. So I would still be finding these people. But it would be sad because there's less opportunity to get out there research and data. And sometimes we've got the next one up is a HR practitioner on the front line of like what's working, what's not working, how hard it is to work in HR. So they're not a media personality. They're on the front line. And I feel like, as always, even going back to our first podcast, then the first one, you just get one of your friends on, don't you? Because you don't really know what you're doing.
Right.
People do that. I had Oren Bowman on, who's someone that I've known for years. And he just came out that when he goes for an interview, that he asks a lot about what the culture is like at the company. And it's like so many people messaged me about that one episode and they was going, yeah, that's such a great thing to do. Like ask them like, oh, do you enjoy, like put it back on the interviewer. Like, do you enjoy working here? How happy are the team? What's the culture like? Have you got a report that you could send me? Like, what's the last employee engagement, employee happiness index that's been done in this company? Like, show me some evidence. Because so many people go and work somewhere and it's horrible and they're treated like rubbish. And then when Oren said that, it's just so obvious. But I'd never done that before. I'd never considered doing that. But it's such an obvious question, isn't it? Like, you're being interviewed by a bunch of people that you probably spend more time than you do with your family. So you should ask. You should ask what the culture's like. And when those little moments happen, it's great.
Well, I would say you're definitely having an impact with your podcast and with the project and with the book. And I think when just like watching you imagine stopping, because I sometimes think I should probably imagine stopping this because like how long can I keep doing it? But one of the things I felt to me like you were also pointing at this. One of the things that keeps me going is I don't know if it's cultural or if it's wired in, but people have better conversations when there's like a reason, like we're having coffee in a cafe and like it's culturally, it varies. Like the Parisian cafes would be different from New York City, but we're having coffee or we're supposed to have a walk and talk at a business meeting. Like there's all these things, but there's always like, we do the thing and we do conversation, or there's conversation and something else. And I don't often find myself having great conversations if I say, hey, I want to have a great conversation with you. And then people go like, why? Like there's like, it almost feels like culturally we're wired for a conversation plus something else. And podcasting is that, you know, plus podcast to me, it's a gateway to invite people to share their story because it's going to go wider than just me. They feel like that time, as you said, that time would be better spent because there's going to be a thing. Yes, there's a safety net. We don't have to publish it. We can edit it, blah, blah, blah. But just that idea of, hey, I would like to talk to you. And I think what you have to say could be shared with more people. That invitation really is, I feel like I would lose too much if I no longer have the ability to offer that invitation if I stopped podcasting.
Yeah, it's it's an absolutely fascinating way of thinking about it, Craig.
Cool. Well, Matt, it was a distinct pleasure. I'm so glad I got a chance. Thank you so much for responding. I do not underestimate the amount of effort it takes to go, I don't know who this guy is, but okay. So I appreciate your time and I hope you have a terrific rest of your day.
Thanks for having me on, Craig. I really, really enjoyed discussing the last 5 years, which I hadn't really thought about until you messaged me.